enjoyed that I was able to visit Perimeter. This is my first time here. Yeah, and I'm going to talk about some results recently obtained in ICFA on metrology and typicality. So the whole project is, I mean, there's like the whole team beyond the project. So these are the people. Okay, I had this pointer. Whatever. Yeah. Okay. So. Okay, there is this Polish mafia. So Remik, Augusiak, Janek, and Maciek, and me. I mean, we are all Polish. Okay. And we are all based in ICFO. Also, there is Christian and Tony. Okay. So. Yeah. And just to tell you. Okay. Where I'm from now. I'm based. Okay. This is really uncomfortable. Okay, that's not going to be there. Okay, so I'm based in. Yeah, so I'm based in ICFO in Barcelona. So it's actually not precisely in Barcelona, but in the it's some suburbs of Barcelona. So it's a relatively nice place because you have beach that is 10 kilometers long. Okay, just close, like 600 meters from the institute. Okay, so it's a very nice place to work. Another picture. Okay, so. Yeah.
Is there good surfing on that beach?
Yeah, it's both surfing, kite surfing. Okay. Yeah. It depends. Okay. Okay, it depends on the time of the year because sometimes the sea is very calm, but yeah. Okay, so. We consider just standard metrology, setting of quantum metrology. So imagine I have a physical system consisting of n qubits, okay, and each of them evolves in the identical fashion, okay, according to the same one particle Hamiltonian, all right, so. And let's assume that this evolution just lasted for time phi, okay? So, such Hamiltonian acting on a state encodes on an initial state rho encodes a parameter phi, okay? And our task is to estimate as well as we can using quantum mechanics the value of this parameter phi. So the general scheme would be the following. You have some input state that you feed to the system that in general can be entangled. You have n identical gates acting parallel on it. They encode the phase. And then you can do arbitrary measurement, arbitrary POVM. You get some classical output, and then then you can construct an estimator of this phi, this unknown parameter, okay, that depends on this output, okay, and the task is to like minimize the error of this estimation, okay, is that okay? That's okay. And how do we quantify the error? Just by the variance of this estimator. Okay, so it's a standard result from quantum metrology that no matter how you construct this estimator, that its variance is sort of bounded by the inverse of so-called quantum Fisher information, okay, which is some function of a state and this Hamiltonian that encodes the phase, okay. And okay, I'll dwell more on this quantity later. There are two things I want to point out already. So we can distinguish, for the case when this H is local, so we have n independent terms that, n identical terms that act locally in the Hamiltonian, then we have so-called standard quantum limit that says that for separable input states, this variance, is lower bounded by at most 1/n, at least 1/n, and there is some factor that depends on the local Hamiltonian. So these are, well, this is the maximal and minimal eigenvalue of the local Hamiltonian. Okay, so for separable rows, the maximal precision that we can get is at most 1/n. All right, but since we can also plug entangled states, so in general, this precision can be linearly enhanced. Okay, so we get term like 1/n². Okay, so this is referred in the literature to so-called Heisenberg limit or Heisenberg scaling. Okay, what I want to say is, there are some particular states that saturate this bound, and the thing is, okay, if one computes the function of the state, okay, for a given input state, then one can always construct estimator that would saturate this bound. Okay, so throughout most of my talk, I will be analyzing this quantum fishing information. Okay, that is okay. Some function of the state and the encoding. Okay, I'll be using this. Okay, one can, for Hamiltonian encoding, I didn't say anything about any losses yet, but for Hamiltonian encoding, one can just write down explicitly this function as a, well, in terms of eigenvalues of the state and the Hamiltonian. All right, so this is some maybe complicated sum, but for pure states, that really simplifies to essentially just the variance of the state of the Hamiltonian in the state psi. All right, so there are some states that saturate this Heisenberg limit. Okay, so for the typical example is so-called GHZ state. Okay, I need a chalk. Probably, is there a chalk? All right, so I guess, I mean, on the top. Okay. So it's really hilarious. Okay, so for the case when this H is just a sum of sigma z that act independently. Okay, so just, well, the state that saturates this, that gives this Heisenberg precision is just GHZ state. But notice that, for instance, once you lose just one particle, this state becomes separable. Okay, so upon the law, after you lose just one particle, you model that by a partial trace, the state is separable. So it's useless for metrology because you can get at most linear scaling. Okay, so the question, in the talk, I'll be addressing questions. Okay, what states will be typically useful for metrology? Okay, so yep.
Wait, so the idea is that this would be, you're looking for states that would be robust to losing a few particles but still get the Heisenberg scale,
yeah,
or something. Okay, got it.
I mean,
or something close to the Heisenberg, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
All right. So.
Okay. So. To be more specific, I'll be saying the question, is this Heisenberg scaling a typical property of multi-particle states in the limit when number of particles goes to infinity? So, here already the answer to this question. So first, when we just take random states of distinguishable particles, it turns out that typically you just achieve so-called standard quantum limit, regardless whether or not you apply, so you can even apply local interior optimization. Okay, so you can, before the state enters the protocol, you can, you have a freedom to rotate it in a local fashion. Then even still, you cannot gain much, okay? But when you focus only on symmetric, random symmetric states or random bosonic states, okay, so you take the symmetric subspace of the space of distinguishable particles, then for fixed Hamiltonian encoding, you get the scaling, and it turns out to be, the scaling turns out to be robust under some dephasing noise, under loss of particles, and even, okay, in a sense, experimentally, I mean, okay, this enhancement would be experimentally accessible, and I will explain later what I mean by that. Okay, so, yeah?
The state over here,
yeah?
This is in the symmetric subspace, right?
Yes.
But it's not robust. So is the state...
It's not robust,
right.
Yeah.
So is the statement here about these typical states being robust, that's just most of the bosonic states...
Yeah, would be... Would,
but that one is not.
Yeah, that one is a particular example of the state which is not robust, but in most of them will turn out to be robust.
Yeah. You mean if you pick one at random, then that's very likely to be robust.
Pardon?
If you just choose one randomly, then that's very likely to be robust.
Yeah, I mean, I will be like precise later on in the talk what I mean by those statements. All right, so here's, okay, that was an introduction. This is the outline of my talk. So first, okay, I mentioned about like, I mean, I use statements like the states will be like typically robust, okay, or will typical have enhanced precision, but this word typically refers to some statistical ensemble, okay, so I'll have to like specify what statistical ensembles I have in mind, okay. So in the first part of the talk, I will specify those ensembles, and I will introduce the important tool of concentration of measure that would be like essential to get the results I'm advertising here. Then I will present results on typical properties of distinguishable particles from perspective of metrology. Then I will discuss typical properties of symmetric states, okay, for metrology. In the fourth part, I will present like specific protocol that allows to obtain Heisenberg scaling for most of symmetric states, okay, with high probability. So it will be just a single measurement, okay, single measurement scheme that would give this Heisenberg scaling. Okay, in the end, I'll talk something about, how states that are useful for metrology can be effectively generated by random bosonic circuits. Okay, so there will be some approximate designs appearing, stuff like that. Okay, so this is like another picture. So because the project started in Benasca last year, okay, and this is a photo from Benasca. There you have Aneto, the highest mountain around, very, very nice hike. So if you guys are ever in Benasca, so I recommend it. Yeah, okay, and now I move to concentration of measure. All right, so, okay, so I guess you folks are all familiar with that, so I will be very brief. So informally, this is a statement saying that for some high-dimensional spaces, sufficiently regular functions attain typically values very close to their means, okay? So, like, main example that people usually give in this context is n-dimensional sphere. And the thing is, okay, the... okay, so... as the dimension of the sphere increases, the probability that some, well, suitably regular function on the sphere would have values that are different from its mean by some epsilon, okay, and this epsilon is fixed, this probability goes to zero as the dimension of the sphere increases. Okay, so it's okay. So most of the states, like up to some exponential collection, have values very close to the mean. Yep.
Sorry, I should remember this because I thought about this stuff before. When you say a function from the d minus one dimensional sphere to the real line, that needs to be a family of functions. How are they different?
All right. This is okay. Yeah. Okay. So if you have a family of functions that have the same Lipschitz constant,
yeah.
Okay. Or that whose Lipschitz constant is bounded from above by some fixed number, then for like every function, I mean, so this family depends on D, right? Because
yeah,
so for every like member of such a family, so for every fixed D, you will have such an inequality.
So,
okay.
So then this really doesn't depend on. Does this depend on D going to infinity at all?
Because it depends.
Depend on thinking about F as a sequence, does it?
No. Okay. So I mean, one can okay. But the thing is, like in physical, okay, so maybe I was not very like clear about it. So in the physical context, one usually just have like a family of functions that have like the same origin,
yeah.
Okay, like quantum Fisher information or
yeah.
some expectation value, for instance.
Yeah.
All right. So and they are like in a way uniformly defined for every d.
Right.
Okay. But the statement is like a statement for particular d and for some particular function.
Yeah.
Okay. But for
the f's at different d's.
The only relation is that the measure of regularity, so-called Lipschitz constant, okay, has to be like bounded by L, okay, and regardless if that happens regardless of d for this family of functions, then this happens.
Yep.
Yeah. But I simply didn't want to introduce additional index like d here because it's just yeah. Okay. All right. And this is a very like funny phenomenon. For instance, if you take just this is a very standard thing. So if you take just a z component or one of the components of this one of the coordinates of the point in a sphere, okay, then with high probability, random point from a sphere will be very close to the equator. Okay, because the average value of a single component, okay, is zero, when the sphere is centered in the zero position. Okay, yeah, and so this is kind of, at first sight, I mean, quite non-intuitive, but nowadays people use it, extensively in quantum information, as you guys all know. So for instance, in this kind of techniques appeared when people said foundations of quantum statistical mechanics, okay, to prove that, I don't know, some states can be effectively described by some statistical ensembles like microcanonical or canonical, etc. Also in the context of some additivity conjectures and in the context of like studies of typical properties of entanglement for multipartite system. Okay, so in this talk, we will employ the tools of this concentration of measure to the setting of metrology. Okay, so okay, let me just give you an exemplary statement how this concentration of measure can be used. Okay, so if you have a bipartite system, okay, and you take so you have a system and an environment, okay, and if you take psi to be a random, okay, and then you take the partial trace of this random state to the subspace A, okay, then the state would be very close with high probability to the maximal mixed one on this subspace. Okay, so and when you measure the entanglement, when you decide to measure entanglement of such a state via like the degree of mixedness of the reduced state, that statement tells you that typical random states from such a system are very entangled. Okay. All right. So, but I just gave like okay. So what are the particular concentration inequalities that I will be using it throughout this talk. So concentration of measure doesn't hold only for a sphere, but it holds more generally for some manifolds, Lie groups, etc. And I will be extensively using concentration inequality for special entire group on some Hilbert space. Okay, so essentially the statement is once again is analogous as before, but now I have just some function defined on special entire group on the Hilbert space that has some mean and some Lipschitz constant with respect to the geodesic distance on this group. This is a Lie group, so it is a Riemannian manifold. So there is a notion of geodesic distance on it. And the statement is the following. So as the dimension of this Hilbert space increases, the sufficiently regular functions concentrate very effectively around their mean values. Okay, so this is all like more standard thing as well. So let me just define the ensembles or ensemble of states I will be often considering. So so I will be looking at isospectral density matrices. Okay, so this is a generalization of the set of pure states. So imagine I pick a fixed state from this space that has some spectrum, okay, and then I apply any unitary rotations to it, okay. So in this way, I will get all the states that have the same spectrum as the original guy, and so by studying typical properties of I don't know Fisher information, okay, I will be on this set. I will be able to say how properties, typical metrological properties of those states vary as I vary the spectrum of my state. Okay, so on the state, yep.
So the kind of unitary symmetry determines the measure on each of these isospectral
yes,
surfaces.
Yes.
But then the measure between them is not defined.
No, they're all defined. I haven't mentioned that. So the measure there is just comes from the measure on the unitary group. So they have like the same, these are like different sets, like formally, but those measures have the same origin. They come from the higher measure on the unitary group.
Right, so I don't quite get it. So what I'm kind of thinking is, if I have a sphere, there's a unique measure on the sphere that is invariant under rotating the sphere around, right?
That's what
defines the Haar measure. Okay, but if I have a set of nested spheres and no way to kind of move between them, then that only defines the metric on each subspace.
Okay.
And then so the question is how is the measure getting defined as you go?
Sure. Yeah. So when you, when you have a like compact, when you have special entire group or unitary group, there's a unique invariant measure on this group.
Okay.
All right. So.
But isn't that just the subspace? Am I thinking about this wrong? The special unitary group corresponds to these rotations, right? So
yes.
What's the part that's telling me about how the different shells relate to each other?
So the different measures, right? Usually people think of the Haar measure, but there's other things like the Guinevere ensemble and the Pires measure, which deal with mixed states as well.
They are measures for. I'm going to consider just each of those layers separately.
Right. Got it.
Okay. So there is like no need to go from one to another. If one has some results about each layer, so to say, then if you have some distribution on the spectrum,
yep.
Okay, then you can glue it together to have a Is it clear? No?
Yeah, yeah, you're,
okay.
The results are going to be for each layer kind of individually.
Yeah, yeah.
And they won't rely on
yeah, how they...
Got it. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Thanks.
All right. So this is the ensemble of random states I'll be studying. For this age, okay, this age will be the Hilbert space of interest. Okay, one more photo, okay. I'm not very good in telling jokes, so it's like another like piece of entertainment. So this is like the view from the top of Aneto, okay, very, very nice height. It's in the summer, yeah. So you have a glacier in the top, yeah, and you have to have crampons to get there, actually. Yeah. All right. So now I introduce like most of the technical tools I will be using. So let me just give you the outline of the proofs of the results that we obtained. So throughout the most of the talk, I will be studying this quantum fission information. So the first step, okay. So this is a function of a state, okay. But if I allow the state to be rotated in this way, that becomes a function on a unitary group, okay. And as I go, if you use arbitrary go over all states from the set of isospectral density matrices, okay. So the first technical part is to estimate its constant of this function as a function on special unitary group, okay. And this is not so trivial because this is like it's not a linear function of the of U, okay. We compute or bound the expectation value of this function. On the set of isospectral density matrices. Then we use this concentration of measure inequalities to infer about typical properties of typical values that this function attains. Okay, and now there is like a catch because those U's here can be either unitaries that act on the full Hilbert space of distinguishable particles, or they can act on they can be just unitaries on the symmetric subspace. Okay. So I just be using this capital theta notation to make the results compact and hopefully more clear. Okay. So here are the results for.
Sorry, can you go back just 1 second?
Yeah.
30 seconds.
Sure.
That's right.
Yeah, but okay, this is like. Essentially, this is like the natural what you do when you want to use those concentration of measure inequalities, regardless of the space of the domain when you have. So you first try to have the regularity of the function. Then you need to compute the average or bound the average somehow. Then you use those inequalities. Okay.
This notation at the bottom. Instead of big O notation, it's like big theta notation.
Yeah.
Or, okay.
So
functions upper and lower bounded by.
Yeah. So I.
Some constant. So it's,
because I don't want to like bother too much with. From the perspective of metrology, I'm lying a bit, but it's not. If you are talking about Heisenberg scaling, for instance, it doesn't matter if you have some prefactor in front. Okay. So that's why, and I don't want to have some ugly constants. That's why I will have this capital theta. Yeah. Okay. So now I move to results on typical metrological properties of distinguishable particles. All right. So as I said before, I will be considering locally optimized Fischer information. Okay, so before before the state enters the protocol, I am allowed to perform arbitrary local interrotations to maybe enhance its metrological properties. Okay, so the result is the following. regardless, so typical random states of distinguishable particles would not be useful for metrology. So to be more specific, if I fix some single particle Hamiltonian, local dimension, some state on this space of distinguishable particles, and then I'm considering, okay, I would locally unitarily fission information that which is optimized by local interoperations. Then for typical states from this orbit, the scaling would be at most like n. Okay, so this is with, so the probability that I will not have linear scaling would decay essentially exponentially with n, the number of particles.
Can I just check that I understand the notation? So the right-hand side, that theta on the right-hand side,
yeah.
If you replace it with a big O, is the statement identical since you're using the left-hand side?
Have the big O, meaning that would mean that I can upper bound this by some quantity, okay?
Right.
So that would, no, then I would have to use small O here, okay? Yeah, because like I cannot, you know.
Okay,
yeah.
Small O being a lower bound?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I wanted to use this capital theta to,
yep.
Not to,
no, that's
okay.
Useful. Okay.
So, I mean, yeah.
But the fact that you have that less than sign does mean you could go to a small O, they're equivalent.
Yeah, I mean, if I have.
This is just to make sure I know what's going on, like not like as a.
Tell you how you should. This seems totally fine to me. I'm just trying to make sure I'm not.
Sure, sure. So here's the sketch of the proof. So first, it is possible to find a bound on the Lipschitz constant of this local of this fission information. It turns out to be of order n squared, okay? And this is like a technical statement, and it relies on the results on continuity of fission information that were obtained last year by my colleagues from ICFO. It is possible to bound from above the average value of this guy as follows, and in order to do so, we use the fact that random pure states have typically very mixed marginals. Okay, so essentially, how to make it fast? They have very mixed marginals. So for fixed without local interior optimization, I can compute it explicitly, okay? And I'm going to show that in the next slide. So, I mean, intuitively, so since the marginals become very, very mixed, okay? So for pure states, this quantity is just a variance, and if you expand the variance, you will have like cross terms, So variance of h on state psi, okay, is upper bounded by just expectation value of the h squared on the state psi, okay, and here you will have this h has this local structure, okay, so then you expand it and you have some guys that just act on the single particle. Okay, and here you have like a double sum, hi, hj, expect trace with psi, okay? So the thing is, this guy is traceless, okay? And since if this is like the same as taking the Pasha trace over n minus two particles from hi, hj, trace of that with this guy. Okay, so this guy is very close to identity. So this thing would be very small. Okay, so this is like the intuition beyond the beyond why this is the case. Okay.
Just to see if I understand, basic intuition is that these states, on average, they're very entangled, but just bipartite entanglement.
Yeah.
And then when you're like,
you have multipartite system.
Right.
So
right, but I mean, on any.
So the thing is, clearly you need entanglement, okay, but you don't need. You don't want your marginals to be very mixed to be useful for metrology, all right? The thing is, if you don't have if you don't have local interior optimization, okay, then one can explicitly compute average of quantum Fisher information on this ensemble of isospectral density matrices, all right? So if you just pick some state from some Hilbert space, you have some Hamiltonian there. The state has some eigenvalues. Okay, then this average value, in general, it's like some ugly sum over eigenvalues, but for pure states, this is just related to the trace of h squared. Okay, so notice that if I have the space of distinguishable particles, so if I take this. Okay, if I have this, let me maybe compute that for you very fast. So if you once again expand H in the same fashion, okay, then because such guys here are traceless, all the guys that have this is linear in N, this is the only part that can be quadratic in N, okay? But since here you have guys that are traceless, okay, this cancels out, okay? So that shows that the average for average value of Fisher for such a Hamiltonian is scales like n, okay? All right, and the thing is, in general, one cannot do something like that for entanglement. Seeking for entanglement properties of on the set of isospectral density matrices is much much harder than Fisher. You don't have such a like explicit formula in general, unfortunately. In order to do that, one just realizes that this quantum Fisher information is just a let's say quartic polynomial in U, okay. Quartic polynomial in U. Okay, so if you just put U here, okay, then you can put this U to act. Then it acts on the eigenvectors. Okay, you can put it to H. Okay, and then as you go around the states that have the same spectrum, this thing is like fixed, and here just do the averaging over U's. And it's like standard to do this kind of integrals. All right, another. So this is actually from Brazil, because the other part of the project was done in Paraty in this conference that where I met Daniel. Okay, and this is some nice beach that was nearby.
Can you give me some intuition why this for random state?
What fails?
This estimation.
So the intuition.
Intuition means like you can compute feature information, but without using your feature information.
Well, the intuition that we have is that typical. let's say, that is that quantum Fisher information, for instance, for pure states, just depends on correlations, two-body correlations, okay? Random states have very, like, very mixed marginals, two-body marginals, so it's hard, for quantum Fisher, it's hard to distinguish those states from a maximal mixed one. Okay, so this is like the, this is the intuition. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then I probably don't know why this feature information is related to this estimation.
Why is it related? All right, so I will be like talking later on. Okay, why is that the case? But in order to derive it, okay. I will address your question later in the talk, okay? Because it's first one has to define classical Fisher information, okay?
Yeah.
Any way of explaining these things without using Fisher information?
I have very random state, very very uncountable.
Okay, so.
So I guess it all depends on the like measure of error that you choose for this measure of error, which is like a variance of the estimator of the estimation, that turns out to be figure of merit. Okay, if you choose different measures of error, then your figure of merit might change. Okay.
So the variance is like fix a value for the parameter you're trying to measure, a hypothetical value. Mm-hmm. And you say what is the variance on the estimator, like the outcome I end up predicting from the data, mm-hmm. right? And so it's that width that we're using right now, I don't have a great intuition from the Fisher information except that it gives you that width. Mm-hmm. It basically tells you how does your probability distribution change as you change your control parameter. So this phi, you move the phi up and down. Mm-hmm. How does that change the thing that you're actually measuring, the probability distribution for it?
Come back to your question later on, okay? Although it would be, okay, I know that this is a nice maybe mathematical explanation, but yeah, from the intuitive point of view, that was surprising for us to some extent that those random states are not useful, actually. Yeah?
So I'm trying to remember back when I read these original papers by Cephaloid and all these guys. The idea is that having entangled initial states is a useful resource that was via the Heisenberg limit, but making like entangled measurements is not useful.
It really depends because I mean if you
in general one needs to have entangling measurements as well, okay? For some particular families of states, like JZ state, no, but in general, I guess.
Okay, good. So that state, right, they show that basically you saturate the Heisenberg limit, you can create that state, but the measurement you have to do can be a separable measurement.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that, and this is neat and surprising to me, what you're saying is that the results you have kind of, how you make the measurement becomes important then.
Later I'm going to say that for symmetric states, one can just fix one measurement, okay? Which is actually good from the pragmatic point of view,
okay?
But I will move to that later on.
Okay, so the symmetric subspace is the one where most states are useful. And what you're saying is that not only are most states useful, most states are useful even with a fixed measurement, separable measurement or a fixed entangled measurement?
That would be experimentally accessible measurement. I will come to that standard interferometric measurement. I will come to that later. Okay, so, okay, but these were like results on distinguishable particles we say that typical states are not useful. Okay, so what about, what about then now symmetric states? Okay, so the using this paper, I mean, our intuition came from this paper by Hillus and I guess Otfried Giner was there as well, or Geza Toth, I don't remember. So they proved that almost all pure states that are symmetric, okay, have scaling better than n, okay? But I mean, so quantum vision information scales better, is bigger than n for most, I mean, for almost all such guys.
But not n-squared.
No, not n-squared, okay? So now we take this symmetric subspace, and what we prove is that okay, once again, when you have a fixed Hamiltonian, like a pixel codimension, the state, okay, then if your state was sufficiently far away from the maximal mixed state in the symmetric subspace, okay, then you'll have typically Heisenberg scaling. Okay, so this is essentially the meaning of this statement. Okay, so the probability that Fisher information of a random state is smaller than n squared, okay, times okay some Bure distance, okay, it's like some correction, okay, this is exponentially suppressed as n goes to infinity, all right, and actually, yeah, it's kind of nice to see how one can prove it. Okay, because it uses some elementary group theory. Okay, so let me just give you the intuition how it works. So, okay, let me take once again this sigma z Hamiltonian to be concrete. Okay. Okay. So notice that essentially. This is like sigma z operator. Okay, so viewed as a like representation of sigma x in this Hilbert space. Okay, many qubits. Okay. All right. So then, let me just focus on pure states now. Okay. So. Essentially, the Fisher information of psi, okay, is related to the expectation value of h squared. All right. So, what is this h squared? So this is nothing else than this jz squared. Okay. So now, as I average over all pure states, okay, this guy becomes just one over, okay, here I average over all like symmetric states, okay, symmetric. So this guy becomes one over, okay, the dimension of the symmetric subspace of qubits is is n plus one. Okay, so it's like 1 over n plus 1. And here I have trace jz squared. Okay, so this is nothing. Maybe you can recall that, Casimir operator for SU2 is just jx squared plus jz squared plus jy squared. Yeah, so. And all those traces will be the same. Okay, so this is not like 1/3 of n plus one trace of the like squared total angular momentum. Yeah. All right, but this is in the subspace when the totally symmetric subspace that has eigenvalue like of order like j plus one, and this j is n over 2, j is n over 2 because I have the spin is 1/2, I add n spins, yeah? So that behaves like n squared, So when I plug this, so I mean, this J squared is just, okay, identity times this of this scalar. So that turns out to be, okay, then that will be just one third times this n squared, okay? Because trace of the identity essentially cancels out with this one, okay? So this is how you essentially prove that the scaling typically is Heisenberg. All right, and okay, there are those like corrections. Okay, if you take different spectrum, something else is going on. But yeah, essentially, as long as you are, as this distance is, say, for fixed distance or for bounded from below distance to the maximal mixed state, you get still Heisenberg scaling. All right, for particular ensemble of depolarized states, okay, this is how the situation looks like. So here you have average Fisher, ratio of average Fisher for this defacing parameter P to the average Fisher corresponding to pure states. Okay, so it drops essentially linearly with P. Okay, so here you have Heisenberg scaling here as well. I mean, and only if you are very close to only for P, which is of order 1 minus 1 over n, you lose the scaling. Okay? All right. Any questions? No. Okay, I need to hurry probably. So now the question is how everything is robust to the laws of particles. Okay? So I will be considering the model when I lose precisely k particles now, all right? So I take my row, okay? So then for some reason, okay, I lost particles, so I have access to just the partial trace of row, and then it evolves under, I mean, this encoding acts on it, okay? That's one possibility. I mean, that's one way to look at it, but since this operation commutes with this encoding, one can first just encode the phase in the full state and take the reduction, okay? And then imagine that, okay, you have just access to n minus k particles in the output, okay? And you play this inference game as before, all right? So the main problem with, main technical problem with studying properties of Fisher information here is that this ensemble is not well studied. So in particular, you lose this property that you have fixed spectrum, okay? Yeah, so nevertheless, we are able to prove some non-trivial results, okay? So, okay, once again, I mean, this is some, okay, mathematical statement, but essentially what it says is that when you lose constant number of particles, then typically Fisher is at least as big as n squared over k to the power d, where d is the dimension of the local Hilbert space. Okay, so typically Fisher is bigger than this. Okay, after you lose k particles, so for fixed k, the Heisenberg scaling is still present. And remember this example of GHZ state, that was not the case. All right.
Fixed K, the Heisenberg scaling is still present, but I'm just having trouble interpreting this. But if you lose a fraction, then
right. Right. So if you lose, okay, so if you lose the fraction
like n to the power alpha,
yeah.
So when alpha is sufficiently small, you can still get something which is not better than standard quantum limit, okay? Yeah, and okay, the technical, what we actually do, we use this lower bound for quantum Fisher information here, okay? And then we compute the average of this guy, and that turns out to be a nightmare, like 3 or 4 pages of computations, but And in the end, but in the end, that scales essentially the solar bound scales like n squared over k to the power d. All right. So now I move to maybe the most interesting part, because all of that was kind of pretty academic in a sense that this quantum physical information is a figure of merit for metrology, but this improvement in parameter estimation is obtained in general after you optimize over all measurement strategies. Okay, so here I just go one step back to tell you what people do actually, I guess, in real experiments. So when you have fixed measurement in the end of your protocol, then you have this parameter encoding, as before, and you observe the those statistics, okay? So you have like the family of probability distributions, which is parameterized by this angle phi, which you want to estimate, okay? And then it's a result from classical estimation theory that the best estimator of the phase phi that you can have, the quality of the best estimator of the phase phi that you can have is characterized by this classical official information, which is some function of this family of probability distributions. Okay. So essentially the best the smallest variance is obtained when the smallest variance is 1 over f, this classical Fisher. Okay, and then this quantum Fisher, that this is okay, Benny, now I'm coming back, I'm trying to come back to your question. Okay, so the origin, why the reason why this quantum Fisher appears is that it arises operationally as a like optimization over all POVMs here. Okay, so you optimize all classical Fishers, which are defined in the classical realm, over all measurement strategies. Okay, and then the question that we address, is this Heisenberg scaling? Can one reveal this Heisenberg scaling of typical bosonic states for fixed POVM? Okay, so we just take a standard interferometric setting. Okay, so we have two bosonic modes. Okay, in one arm of the AB, so that corresponds to two arms of the interferometer, and we have the phase added to one of the arms. Okay. And then we have we just measure the number of particles on the output ports, okay? Here we have 50-50 beam splitter, okay? If I want to make a connection to what I was doing before, I have this kind of encoding via JZ operator, okay? And I measure in the effectively I measured in the Dyke basis, but Dyke basis that corresponds to the sigma to the JY operator, okay? Because I can treat this as a huge measurement operator, okay? And I just rotate JZ to JY, okay? And okay, I have this classical official information now, which is like a rational function of a state now. So it's highly like nonlinear object. And we claim that this guy, as the state psi varies over the symmetric subspace, typically behaves like n squared. Okay. And this is, okay, this is the technical statement. Okay, I don't have this now the mixed states for simplicity. Okay. So the statement reads, is the following. So for this fixed parameter encoding scheme and fixed measurement scheme, okay, classical Fisher, okay, it's a bit tricky because we don't get exactly Heisenberg, but we are just slightly below Heisenberg, okay? So for every delta, okay, the informally the statement reads that typical, so if I just want to be slightly below Heisenberg, so if I want to be have scaling like n squared n to the power 2 minus delta, then for any delta which is non-zero, I can typically that holds. All right? Yeah, and unfortunately we are not able to improve that yet, and this is just the artifact of the proof. Okay? And the proof is a bit funny because this function is rational, okay? So the way we proceed, we simply estimate the probability of this guy to be small. Okay, and this guy is, this denominator is usually small with high probability. Okay, and then we just, and the, actually the average of this guy is one of order 1/n. So effectively one can like almost put here 1/n without losing much. But you lose actually something, and that's the reason why those deltas appear. Okay. But for all practical purposes, you have this Heisenberg scaling, I would say, typically. But actually, okay, there's like one interesting subtlety here, which is the following. So this classical efficient information, in general, it depends on the value of this unknown parameter phi, okay? Classical did not depend, but this quantum did not depend, but classical depends, okay? So here the statement reads that for all for almost all symmetric states, for typical symmetric states, and for fixed value phi, the scaling is good. Okay, but actually we can prove that a stronger statement that says that for typical symmetric states, for every value of the unknown phase phi, the scaling is good, which is strictly stronger statement. Okay, so okay, and mathematically this is the way to write it. Okay, so before I maybe emphasize, so that says that for fixed value phi, if I fix it first and then draw states at random, then the scaling would be good typically. Okay, but that in general one can have that for the state that that I picked at random, if I change the phase, the Fisher can drop, could have dropped. Okay, but this is not the case. So for all values of phi, this is, yeah, those states are useful. All right, so okay, now I move to the last part where I want to discuss how to generate states that would have similar properties as those random states effectively. So our inspiration is this work by Fernando, Aram, and Michal, where those guys showed that sufficiently long random circuits on the set of like distinguishable particles effectively approximate T designs in this space. Okay, so just let me come back to the definition of to this formula for Fisher. This Fisher for a fixed spectrum is a polynomial in U. Okay, so of order like 4 or something. Okay, or balanced polynomial of order 2. What? I mean, okay. So when you have the okay, so in order to have a guarantee that some family of pseudorandom states have high Fisher, it's enough to check that this family form an approximate T design. Okay, so all right. Actually, okay, I was referring to some okay I was saying something about the result, but this is not actually what I need here. So what I need is that when you have a set of universal gates in this Hilbert space, okay, and I form random circuits out of it, okay, so first I have identity, then uniformly at random I'm taking one of the gates, okay, then I apply another gate from like independently and so on and so forth. Okay, and this is how I have this random, how I define this random circuit. So those guys showed using some results from from random walks on groups that such circuits would form approximate designs. Okay, so but in general you don't have like a control of, over the convergence of this of those circuits. Okay, so what we do, we want to construct a universal set of gates in the bosonic subspace. Okay, so what we do, okay, we first take our strategy is to take first linear optic gates and then somehow supplement it by some other gate to be universal in the subspace. Okay, so as you, I mean, on the linear optics part, one can take essentially everything because almost every like beam splitter would work. Okay, but we take those particular gates that are proven to have very fast convergence just on the level of linear optics. Okay, so we take those particular gates. Okay, here they are written in the mode picture, but this is how they actually act in this space. Okay, and then we supplement this set of gates by this cross-curl gate, okay, and it is possible to prove that those gates together are universal in this Hilbert space of n bosons with two modes. And we played this game, we just, okay, numerically, sadly, because we don't have any control over the convergence of the methods, like generate those circuits. Okay, so once again, I mean, it's like in the connection to this interferometric setup. So, yeah, and here are like the numerical results. So for different initial states, we apply those random circuits, okay? And, okay, we look how classical and quantum Fisher, how they converge, okay? As a function of K, okay? The depth of the circuit. So, all right, so, so for different states, I don't know, here for, I guess we took the GHZ state, okay, here we took some separable state, okay, and it all very well like converges to like our analytical results, okay. Okay, actually here's like for classical Fisher it's like a bound, but it's like almost analytical. Okay, so it behaves quite nicely because after I don't know 30 I forgot, it's like here's like the number of particles of order 100, I guess. Okay, so yeah, so after 25 gates, you are almost like high random already. And here you have the number of gates that are like sufficient to be very close to the average. Okay, so as a function of n. Okay, so this is like the depth of circuit which is needed to be like in the margin of, in that case I guess 1% away of from the average, in this case like 5% away from the average as a function of the number of particles. And okay, and this is like the like comparison how those averages numerical averages behave compared to the analytical values compute for high random states. Okay, so here we have this classical Fisher. Okay, here we have quantum Fisher. So the scaling is quadratic, so they are effectively the same. Here we have like the optimal value given by quantum Camerel bound. Okay, or the optimal Fisher. Okay, and here we have the classical bounds. Okay, so it behaves quite nicely, although sadly we don't have the speed of convergence. the control over the speed of convergence. So that's about it. So this is like the summary of my talk. So so we proved that high random pure states from the set of distinguishable particles are not useful for metrology, even if they allow for local inter-optimization. Moreover, but sufficiently pure high random states from the symmetric subspace attain Heisenberg scaling, and the scaling is robust to noise and finite and loss of finite number of particles. What is really nice, this metrological usefulness for typical symmetric states can be revealed via considering just a single single measurement in the simple simple interferometric setup. Okay. And we demonstrated that that one can efficiently generate states that would have the analogous properties using short random bosonic circuits. All right, and I just finished with some open problems. All right, so we just actually give bounds on the scaling of typical quantum fission information under particle losses, and we don't have like exact control over that, so it would be nice to improve it. We haven't studied yet the behavior of classical fission information under losses, which is like experimentally relevant question, I guess. Neither we studied how those quantities depend when we have more realistic models of noise, like local depolarizing noise or some beam splitters, okay, beam splitter type of noises, okay, or errors. It would be nice to have this experimentalization of those random bosonic circuits. Also, it would be nice to have like a bound on the convergence of this approximate bosonic, of those random bosonic circuits to approximate bosonic T designs. Okay, and there is some nice group theory beyond that. There are some new interesting ensembles of random matrices appearing, like when you just take partial trace over high random state, but in the bosonic subspace, this ensemble, or in the fermionic subspace, if you wish, this ensemble is not well studied. It is also possible to look out on other like invariant subspaces of the many qubit space. So not only symmetric or anti-symmetric subspace, but like some mixed statistics. Okay. This can be useful to study also like generic properties of entanglement for multipartite systems, because there are some relations between various measures of entanglement and quantum fission information. So for instance, certain type of entanglement can be like certified. Can only be present when Fisher is bigger than something. Okay, so. I mean, it's present when Fisher is bigger than something, okay? So when you study typical properties of Fisher, you can infer about typical properties, whether those generic states are entangled in this particular fashion. Other encodings of the phase are possible. And also in the quantum metrology, people study multi-parameter estimation, and analogous thing can be, I guess, carried over there. And this is it. Thank you for your time, your attention. Yeah.
Question? So I'm curious. So in order for your result to hold for the case of a bosonic systems, how random the circuit should be, like finite design?
All right. So you mean for the case of random circuit. That was for the symmetric case only. Okay.
So yeah, so so here so you mean what order of t is necessary?
Yes. Well, for quantum Fischer, the order, I guess, 4 is necessary,
because the quantum Fischer is like, okay, it's okay. Is a why 4? Because okay, depends. Okay, let me maybe introduce some terminology. Okay, so as far as I understand, something like, if something is t-designed, then you essentially can compute this kind of averages, right?
Yeah.
Effectively. So Fischer, for Fischer, this this u is this t is 2 to compute this, okay? But to get concentration for those designs, okay, you need next moment, so then this t would be 4.
So just for the Fischer, you only need 2, but...
Yeah, well, for the average, you need 2,
yeah.
Okay? But for the well, to have some control over how many states are actually useful, okay, you need 4. But the problem is I can't really say what you need for the classical Fischer, because this function is rational. Okay, it's like a nonlinear, it's a highly nonlinear function of, one cannot write it as a, like a trace of the trace of such object with some a. Yeah, so it's like a rational function. So, but I guess some results can be proven as well. Yeah.
Sorry?
Maybe, please. Yeah.
So about the convergence of a random boson-symmetric circuit,
yeah.
What is the difficulty?
All right. So as far
as I understand those, I get through the first few pages of the Bandura paper, okay, and what those guys do there is very nice, but like their original point. So effectively, they in an efficient way. Extend the convergence for just, I don't know, 2 qubit gates, okay, to many particles, okay, but this initial convergence for two qubits is not known. Some parameter that depends on the gates that you choose, okay. So this is like a, well, some free parameter that can be actually arbitrary small, okay. So they so having this parameter, they in an efficient way, okay, have the convergence for the big guys, okay. So in general, as far as I know, except for some particular families of 2 qubit or of a single qubit gates, there. Not known, like there are no convergence results about how random circuits, how fast they would converge, or in the more mathematical terms, how fast the distribution on SU2 or SUD would converge as you apply this kind of random process. So there is a result that once you pick gates that have rational entries and they generate the whole group in a dense manner, okay, meaning they're universal, there is so-called like a gap theorem for SUD, okay, so then you know that everything converges exponentially, but with the rate which you don't know, okay. And yeah, that's really, I mean, for me, interesting thing to study this, how it behaves. Yeah. And okay, this is actually like, okay, the way how, okay, mathematically one can look at this construction in the following way. So you just have some representation of, say, SU2, okay, and you have some universal gates there for this group, and you add something extra, and then the question is how fast you converge. Okay. Yeah. So I guess I mean, in the end of the day, one doesn't need, for instance, that many. Okay, it depends. I mean, one that, so the dimension of the space increases, but you have finite number of gates. So. Yeah, the question is how fast would you converge there?
Any other questions?
Yeah, so maybe I missed this part, but in, when you talk about the losses, like
yeah.
You lose a few of the particles. So if it's just a constant, you're kind of okay.
Yeah.
If you lose like say half of the particles, do you just like lose your proof that it works, or can you prove that it does not work?
No, okay, so yeah, it's related to one of the open problems I gave. So we only use some, okay, it is possible to prove this kind of bound, okay? So we just exploit this bound, and the average value of the left-hand side simply doesn't scale well. So essentially the scaling, let's say, if we forget about this purity thing, so the average value of this guy behaves like that. Okay. Yeah. So let's say if you have two modes, okay. So local dimension is two. Then, well, if then already losing like half of the particles like kills everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Although I mean.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So this is. This is how it works. So in other words, we don't know how it actually behaves.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it just loses the result. Like, you know,
yeah.
It kills off your mind.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
Does, but it could in principle.
Yeah. In principle, yeah. So this is like
one of the questions we want to study further, I guess. Yeah.
And then, maybe I missed this. You mentioned it vaguely in one of the other questions, but does the whole thing, what happens if you do the whole thing with fermions, with anti-symmetric?
Okay, so this is, okay, the thing is, to have something non-trivial for fermions, the local dimension has to exceed the number of particles. Okay, so, okay, this is like in principle doable, and actually this result about general averages of quantum Fischer, okay, kind of hold, I mean, it holds for like arbitrary unitary encodings. And here just, once again, Casimir appears, or like generalized J squared operator, okay? And it's just a matter of, okay, so, in the end, okay, the problem is there are like different conventions in the mathematics literature on those eigenvalues of those Casimirs. Okay, so in this project so far, we simply haven't studied that. But in order to like really apply to plug some value, one really has to be cautious. So for bosonic case, we simply computed this constant by hand because mathematicians have different conventions how to normalize this Casimir, okay? And that drastically might affect the scaling, okay? Yeah. So simply, okay, we want to do that, but we don't know yet the answer.
All right, let's thank you.